Joel Tauber is an assistant professor of art at Wake Forest University, where he's developing their video art program. He's an artist and filmmaker himself, whose work has been shown in solo art exhibitions at places like Suzanne Wielmitter Los Angeles Projects in L.A. and Gallery Adamski in Berlin. Joel's films have screened at festivals including the Sedona International Film Festival, San Francisco Documentary Festival, and the Downtown Film Festival Los Angeles. It was there that his film Sycamore was awarded Best Green Film. You see, for years, Joel has lived with this notion that art can change the world, and Sycamore was one small step in that direction. In Sycamore, that's S-I-C-K-Amour, A-M-O-U-R, he sets out to improve the life of a Charlie Brown-like tree right in the middle of the giant Rose Bowl parking lot in Pasadena. Instead of a Christmas tree, it's a sycamore, asphalted in on all sides, its bark battered from opening and closing car doors. Joel's full art installation, video sculpture, photograph series, giant earring sculptures he made for the tree, and a documentary raised a lot of awareness about the sycamore's miserable plight. It also made a lot of viewers reconsider the environmental toll of urban development and inspire tree lovers in the community to demand new tree-friendly landscaping there and elsewhere. Public art projects ensued, and today 200 tree babies, offspring from the adopted tree, are being planted throughout Southern California. You'll find links to the Sycamore Project at WFDD.org. Joel's new art installation and film shifts from nature to human nature and the sometimes thorny notion of sharing. The Sharing Project investigates why we teach our children to share, while at the same time our society encourages and in so many ways rewards selfishness. The Sharing Project begins with the seemingly simple task of Joel teaching his young son Zeke to share. But the more Joel investigates the act of sharing, even with the help of experts from every applicable field imaginable, the more questions he has. In the process, the Sharing Project forces each of us to rethink our own preconceptions about sharing. Maybe Joel and Zeke will find answers in the forgotten early 20th century socialist Jewish commune of Happyville in South Carolina. But we begin with a look at sharing through the eyes of a child.
And a white man. Yeah, no touch my tools.
I started filming this when Zeke was around 20 months old. So I've been filming him and filming this project for already a year and a half. I went to school with him one day and, you know, first of all, let me just say, I'm not just saying this as his dad, but he's a really sweet kid. He doesn't strike me or other people as an aggressive boy in any way. But it was amazing to me when I went to school with him that there were all these conflicts that were occurring with him and with all these other boys about who had access to what. Like, these were all communal toys. This was at a preschool, and I'd imagine there would be a lot more conflicts if the kids were bringing in their favorite personal things. So even with the communal things that were ostensibly for everyone, there were all these conflicts. The first one happened when Zeke was playing with a ball, and this other kid came up to him and just tried to take it from him. So, I mean, clearly, it would seem, at least at first glance, that Zeke had the right to that ball. He had it first. This other guy was trying to take it from him, but maybe not. I mean, like, you know, there's ideas of, like, turn the other cheek. Maybe he should have just given this kid the ball. I mean, my impulse, which was identical to Zeke, would be to retain that ball, to hold on to the ball he was playing with at first. He had the right to it. And a teacher intervened and let Zeke continue playing with the ball. But even that doesn't seem entirely like a simple question. Moments later, there's another incident that happens. Zeke has a ball, another kid has a ball, and Zeke is having a good time with his ball, but this other boy seems to be having even more fun with the ball. And so Zeke thinks to himself, or at least I think he thinks to himself, wait a minute, I want to have as much fun as this other kid. I want to have that ball. Even though I have this ball, I want another ball. And so he goes and tries to take that ball from the kid. Now, that seems wrong. And the teacher thought it was wrong and stopped Zeke from trying to take that ball. But when I was thinking about it, I was like, well, yeah, that does make sense. But we're in a culture that seems to applaud selfishness and even greed in all these different ways. I mean, so why are we teaching our kids to share or to not take the extra ball when we applaud accumulation in all these ways? So are we being consistent? And that became a really fundamental question for me in this project that I wanted to try to explore. Are we being consistent, and why are we teaching sharing?
these are really huge issues, and they extend far beyond just sharing a ball.
Yeah, so I'm trying to figure this out, and I know that I certainly can't figure it out on my own. So I've been reaching out to a lot of people in a lot of different fields. They include trying to understand if we're actually teaching sharing or are we pretending to teach sharing. So I've been talking to Zeke's teachers and his potential teachers, principals at other schools. I've been talking to psychologists. I've been talking to evolutionary biologists. I've been talking to anthropologists. I've been talking to philosophers, philosophers of science, historians, local activists. And the more people that I talk to, amazingly, in some ways, the less clarity that there is, because it seems like there's additional layers of complexity that keep opening up.
Give me an example.
I got into thinking a lot about evolutionary biology, and I was talking to this fascinating man at Duke named Alex Rosenberg, and he was talking about how it seems like, and there's been a lot of disagreement in the field over time since Darwin about the fundamental question would be, well, if it's all about competition, then why are we altruistic at all? And there's various theories. I mean, one has to do with kin selection, like we're nice to people that we're related to because on a selfish level in terms of the gene, maybe if we're good to someone who's related to us, that benefits us in some way. Or maybe we're good to people, we share with people if we think that there's a chance of reciprocity. So Zeke might share to someone if he thinks that that person will share back with him down the road. Those are things that I recognize in myself in some level too. But the thing that really struck me was this idea that's been popularized more lately called multi-level selection, which is that fundamentally we're conflicted. On the level of the group, there's group selection that encourages us to cooperate with each other, to share with each other, because if a group cooperates, then it's likely to be stronger than other groups. But at the same time, we're wired to cheat and steal and to be selfish within that group to get ahead. And so we're fundamentally conflicted. That just really blew my mind because I recognize that. I'm like, oh my God, yes, I want to have a nice life for myself, for Allison, for our boys, for Zeke and Ozzy. But at the same time, there's part of me that feels that I'm not doing enough for others. There's a philosopher, Christian Miller, who's here at Wake Forest, who was telling me that even though there's all these different models for ethics, for how to be in this world, they're conflicting, but they all point to the idea that we're not doing enough. That really resonates for me. And I was thinking about this philosopher, G.A. Cohen, who makes an argument for socialism. And his argument goes like this. He says, when we go camping, no one thinks that one person should have more food than the other on a camping trip. No one thinks that one person has the right for a bigger tent. We all agree that all the food should be shared equally. And so if we believe that, then how come there's so much inequity? Like, if that's true, perhaps we should be distributing all wealth equally across all borders. Now, that seems politically very difficult, if not impossible. You know, and part of me believed that, but part of me also wanted to have a nice life, nice things for myself and for my family. And there's plenty of arguments, plenty of philosophers that would think that that's totally fine. So where's the line? And how does one figure that out?
Well, I wanted to know in terms of the timing of Happyville. I want to go to Happyville next. It seems like you've discovered this perfect vehicle for exploring the notion of sharing in a socialist communal setting. How did you find it? And well, describe it for us.
Okay. Yeah. I started to think about how in America, we may not have a lot of communes anymore, but there was a time where there was a lot of socialist experiments in this country, especially the 19th century. So I started going through literally bibliographies of 19th century communes and reading up about them. And I came across this one particular one called Happyville in South Carolina, which is close to us. It really grabbed my attention because, well, there wasn't much written about it, but the little that was written about it told this story of these 50 Russian Jews who moved from New York in 1905 to start this socialist community. And They were atheists, they were socialists, they didn't speak English, they didn't know how to farm, but they were able to make this thing work, at least for a few years. Between 1905 and 1908, they made a sawmill, they made a cotton gin, they grew food, raised livestock. There was really sandy soil. It was hard to grow anything on there. There were particularly severe weather, really, really terrible winters that made growing anything really hard. And they had a lot of trouble selling their goods for whatever reason to their neighbors. And they were poor to begin with. So eventually they had to retreat, sell the land, and go back north. But the story really captivated me because as a Jewish guy who moved from the big city to the Carolinas, I just felt a lot of kinship with these guys. They just felt really similar to me in some way. And I just thought, well, these guys were obviously really good at sharing because they lived all together. They shared everything in an egalitarian way. So I bet that if I had talked to them, I would have learned a lot from them. And there was an article that appeared that mentioned a descendant of Happyville who I contacted. Her name is Marcia Savin, and I interviewed her. Really nice and interesting woman. And she had recordings of her uncle who had lived there. And I talked to her, and I spoke to this woman named Doris Baumgarten, who actually had an old map. No one knew where this place was. Like, they sort of knew. There was one article, a larger article, that was written about it in the 70s. And it was, you know, the, like, informative article about it. But even he didn't really know where it was.
Just someplace in South Carolina?
Well, it was near Aiken. But finding out exactly where it was not clear. So Doris had this map, and there was a nice man there named Gary Hooper, who, between these three people and myself, I was able to contact the owner. It was not clear who owned the land. It's 2,200-acre area that's used as a hunting ground now. Really nice guy, and he let me go there to film. And no one knew that there was an old commune there. And it has been in the family for 50 years. It was completely off the map. It had disappeared. This utopian past was gone. And like there was barely any traces of it. And that fascinated me on a poetic level because it just struck me that we're so distant now from these ideals of this pure kind of sharing in our culture that the closest thing to me of where it happened from where I'm living now is almost entirely gone and no one knew where it was. So going back there felt like this huge opportunity to try to recapture that in myself and to look for traces of this utopian past to try to learn from these guys who I'm sure could have taught me a lot. Now I'm going to
be sick. When you look out at the landscape of what's going on in the world today, I mean, what through that lens, what are you seeing?
I'm troubled that we seem to be advocating policies that are directly opposed to sharing in a lot of ways. I mean, we all know about Moral Mondays and the protests that have been happening here in North Carolina. And I've been interviewing activists like Charlie and Ann Wilson and talking to some people who've been here a long time who know a lot about the history, like Hayes McNeil. And it's not like it's only happening here. I mean, we have these kinds of issues all over the country and outside this country, too. But there's this massive discrepancy between the rich and the poor. Charlie Wilson was very much involved with the homeless in Winston-Salem, and he was giving me all these incredible numbers. There were 1,800 people on the street in the 90s per year, 600 homeless a day. And there's all these people who are unemployed. We're in the Great Recession. So how can we pass laws where we're cutting unemployment benefits, both in terms of the dollar amount, but also in terms of the amount of weeks we can get it, and literally refusing expanded federal funds for the unemployed? And how can we be refusing federal funds for expanded Medicaid coverage? I mean, that seems completely antithetical to the idea of sharing. I just don't understand it. And there's a lot of wealth here. There's a lot of mansions and a lot of money in Winston-Salem and in America, but there's a lot of people who don't have it. I don't know where the line is, but clearly people shouldn't be starving and people shouldn't be homeless. The question is how much what the safety net should be, but it seems obvious that there should be good public education for everyone, there should be good healthcare for everyone. And if we're resistant to that, how can we be resistant to that when we espouse the belief in sharing? Why are we teaching that to our kids? We are because we believe, we know it's true. We do want to believe in sharing, but how can we be doing that and then be acting in opposite ways?
Artist, filmmaker, and Wake Forest University Assistant Professor of Art, Joel Tauber. The Sharing Project will eventually become a multi-channel sculptural video installation, as well as a feature film that'll premiere soon afterwards. Meanwhile, Joel continues filming in Happyville. He's recently discovered more dilapidated buildings there, as well as an ancient horse carriage. He's currently wrapping up film work ahead of his shows at the Adamski Gallery in Berlin this spring, and at Suzanne Vielmetter LA Projects in June and July 2015. There'll be preview events in L.A. and Berlin, and there'll also be a movie for the big screen. In the meantime, you'll find links to the Sharing Project website, Facebook page, and more at WFDD.org, and click on Triad Arts Weekend. There's a fantastic 6-minute video preview there as well, including scenes of Zeke and Joel working away together with Zeke's tools on fixing the Happyville tractor.